Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Rutherford, the creator of the Online Armor Showcase. Tonight, I'm going to go way off topic as I show you how to put together a video podcast in this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome to episode number 12 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Online Armor Showcase at army.rocklesoftware.com. I'm going to tell you straight up front right now, normally this is podcast is a great place to find some information about miniature wargaming, but tonight I'm actually not going to talk about any games in general. I'm actually going to fulfill a promise I made last episode, number 11, which is when I got my whole audio system up and running, I was going to show you guys how to do it and duplicate it so you don't have to spend so much time and wasted money getting one together for yourself if you decide to do something like, say, audio podcast or video podcast. So right now I'm actually showing you a video of my little soundboard I got. But I'm actually going to start first by talking about my video camera. And now obviously I'm kind of in first-person mode here, recording with my video camera. So you really can't see the camera as I talk about it, but you know, just bear with me. So, there's several different types of video cameras you can get out there. Obviously, the most prominent one are types of mini-DV. Mini-DV refers to the little miniature digital tapes. Well, they are actually tape media. It stores the video format in digital, so it's not like any kind of analog tapes. And mini DV cameras come in all sorts of basically quality levels. The one I've got here is a Samsung SD27. It's a fairly old camera. It's about maybe, I want to say about close to 4 years old now. And when I bought it back then, it was $500. I mean, now this camera's probably a lot cheaper, but what you want to look for if you're doing especially a podcast, you don't need a nice, fancy, high-definition camera. Because, you know, there's, like, some new ones by Canon and Sony that can record upwards of 1080i or 720p or the fancy 24p film mode. Those, by the way, if you're not familiar with those numbers, they're different resolutions. Like, for example, 1080i means you're looking at 1,080 lines of vertical resolution in the film, and I stands for interlaced, and P stands for progressive, which we'll talk a little bit about maybe later. But any standard mini DV camera that's not high def will probably record in your standard resolution. Like this one here has 480 lines of vertical 480 vertical lines and it's interlaced. So when I put this thing, if I were to record this thing and put this thing on a DVD and actually show it to you uncompressed, this looks pretty darn nice. It's not quite DVD quality, but it might be. It depends on DVD, but it's pretty good quality. So just a standard mini DV camera that doesn't do high definition would be more than enough for what you need for a video podcast. Some other things you want to look for is what type of audio inputs you have and what type of outputs you have to get the video from the camera to the computer. Most mini DV cameras will actually have a FireWire port, or sometimes it's called 1394, because 1394 is the specification number given to FireWire by the IEEE. So it's one of those things you want to look for. And that basically allows for very high-speed transfers of video from the camera to your computer. Normal FireWire 1 has what's 400 megabits per second. FireWire 2, or FireWire 800 as it's called, has 800 megabits per second. Don't worry about the exact numbers. Either one of them is fast enough to transfer standard definition video to your computer. So the question then comes in, how do you capture the video into your computer? Well, obviously you need some type of software, and of course you need a FireWire port, and therefore also a FireWire cable. Now on the topic of the FireWire ports, in the past couple of years, I want to say maybe past two or three, they did a slight redesign of the FireWire ports on computers. Like my old Pentium 4 1.6 computer I have upstairs, it's close now, almost 6 years old. The actual FireWire port, while it's the same basic thing, it's a little bit different. So my old FireWire cable I had originally, this camera that I tried to use in my new computer, which is a brand new custom-built Vista system that I got about 3 weeks ago, the FireWire cable is not actually compatible between the two cameras. So make sure if you buy a new computer, or if you have a new computer, that you can get a new FireWire camera, or FireWire cable should work fine. For an older computer, you might have to go rummaging around a little bit, because then, you know, I have to check, but I don't think the new FireWire cables will work on older computers. It's the same number of pins in there, and the protocol is still the same. But what they did is, with the new cables, they actually put little plastic spacers inside the port, because I guess there was a rare chance that two of the pins and the old connectors could actually short together and damage the port or damage the camera. So just keep that in mind when you're rummaging around looking for FireWire cables. If you have an older computer, you're going to have to look around and make sure you can probably get an older FireWire cable, because the new ones may not fit. And vice versa, an old cable will not fit into a new FireWire port. Then, of course, you got to have a way to get the video and audio data from the camera to the computer with using your FireWire port. So, there's a couple ways to do it. You got to get a program that can capture video into your computer. I can tell you right now, if you have Windows Vista, or if you're running an Apple computer with OS X and have iMovie, both of those are fully capable of recording in FireWire inputs. Also, of course, though, obviously, using Windows Vista, you're going to be using Windows Movie Maker, which is not a very good program. iMovie, well, I personally haven't used it. It's also a very low-level, basic program. So if you really want to get serious into this, recommend getting either maybe, I use Sony Vegas for my professional productions. I do it on a PC. If you're on an Apple computer, the vast majority of the people will swear by Final Cut Pro. I haven't used it, but I've heard just great stuff about it. Granted, that's a $1,300 program, but, you know, it's a professional-level program. So any basically high level program will be able to record in using recording the data from the FireWire and basically store it away on your computer. The question is, what if your camera doesn't have a FireWire port? Now, every camera, at least I've seen up to this point, has some sort of analog video output. Like, for example, mine has a little red, yellow, and white cables. The red, yellow, and white cables you normally heard are called composite cables. Some high-definition cameras might have component cables, which, if you know, are the red, green, and blue, so you can get higher-definition camera outputs. But if that's the only option for recording out from your camera, you have to buy what's called a special capture card. I have an older one I use from time to time called a DC-10 Plus. And this piece of hardware is old. And, I mean, it basically, give you an idea how old it is, it really doesn't work all that well with Windows XP, and I'm sure it wouldn't even run as Windows Vista, because the company just doesn't support it anymore because it's so old. But unless you got a really old video camera, you're probably not going to have to worry about that too much, because most modern-day cameras and mini-DVs and beyond are going to have some sort of FireWire hookup you can hook straight up your computer and record the video in. So, what about USB ports? Now, obviously, if you know the speeds of USB 2.0, they can be upwards of 480 megabits per second. But wait a minute, 480 megabits, that's faster than FireWire's 400 megabits per second, assuming you're not using FireWire 800. But the thing is, FireWire is actually a better quality cable or protocol. FireWire is a better protocol for capturing video because it can maintain at 400 megabits per second. USB 2.0, while theoretically can boost up to 480 megabits per second, it's really designed to do more burst transmission, where for video capturing, you want a nice steady stream. So how much hardware space do you have to have on your camera? How much hardware space do you have to have on your computer? Assuming you're capturing the raw DV video from your camera and not immediately compressing into something, or you know, most hard drive cameras will actually compress the video with their own codec and you copy it over, you know, as if you're copying a video off an external hard drive. So let's assume you're not doing the fancy hard drive cameras, you just have a FireWire cable. In my case, my 480 lines of resolution interlaced is about 3.5 megabytes per second. So the more hard drive space you have, the better. Fortunately, any more hard drive space these days is pretty cheap. I actually got my new computer has a pair of 500 gigabyte drives in it. Each one, I want to say, was maybe $150. I mean, I got to check on that. But I'll link to some good deals on hard drives from like Newegg or somebody. So let's say, for example, if you have, say, a 500, well, let's do 250 gigabyte drive, because I know how much that takes. That can pretty much support probably close to 20 hours of raw uncompressed video. And once you start compressing things down to MPEG-2, or chances are for podcasts, you're going to be using either WMV, which is the Windows proprietary format, or you're going to use MP4 or .MOV, which are, you know, commonly used for Apple formats, or maybe you can use .H.264 compression, which is the best compression out there right now, but it's also very CPU intensive. and I can't almost say all the programs support it. So one last thing I consider about the camera is the microphone that's on board the camera. You'll find that in most professional audio setups, you're not going to want to use that microphone. It's not that bad of a microphone. Like, if you were to go back and listen to episodes 1 through 4 and then 7, I actually recorded those episodes of the podcast using the camera microphone, and I mean, it sounds all right. The big problem is, though, is not only do you record the sounds you want to hear from us talking, you also record the sounds you don't want to hear. Like, you know, a few times my roommate walked in and was talking on his phone, you could hear that, and maybe the refrigerator kicked on in the back, or the dishwasher, or the dryer, or something. So, I mean, if you know you got a quiet set, you can probably get away with using the microphone on the camera, but for most setups, I'd recommend not using it. So that's enough about rambling about FireWire. Let's talk a little about your audio input. There's basically probably three types of audio inputs you're going to find. Some really high-end cameras, you're going to get what are called XLR inputs, which I'm going to zoom in on my soundboard here. And there's three little pin ports. They're a nice big round circle with three little pins in them. Those are the kind of things used by professional microphones. We'll talk about those a little bit later. But chances are, on maybe a lower end, what's called a prosumer camera, you're going to find either a line in port or a microphone in port. Now, these are two very different things because they operate different power levels, which is a really bit of a frustration for me initially. Because line in ports, like let me zoom back into my soundboard here, you can see there's a little thing that's labeled line. Line in ports operate essentially at higher power than microphone in ports. So, in the case of, say, this audio board, I imagine most of them have basically line outs. So, over here, the main ports are line outs. The control rooms are all line level outs. And I also have some little AV ports in the back that are all line level outs as well. So, if you have a microphone input on your camera like I do, you're going to need some kind of way to reduce the power from the line out power down to the microphone power. Because, as I mentioned, the microphone power or microphone inputs operate at a much lower power than the line in inputs. So if you were to hook a line input up to a microphone input, at the very best, you can get what's called clipped audio, where the audio sounds very distorted. Like, let's see, if I crank this thing up, like right now as I'm talking, it's probably like, yeah, as I'm clipping like crazy. So you get something like this if you were to hook up the line input right to the microphone input. At the very worst, doing that kind of thing would actually result in damaging the camera, or maybe, you know, just damaging the camera and blowing out the little microphone input. So the few things you're going to need to know when you look at a camera is, what type is it? Is it mini DV? I mean, there's other things out there. Obviously, there's the hard drive based cameras. There's also ones that burn straight to DVDs. It really doesn't matter what you choose. Just my best recommendation is look at some camera models in the stores, play around with them, and just jot down the names of the ones you like and go online and read reviews. I mean, go Amazon.com, or sometimes you can just type in the camera name space review into Google and get all sorts of cool results, seeing what people liked about the camera and what they didn't like. But in the case of the podcast, pay very attention to that line in or microphone in inputs, because you're going to need to know that for when it comes to setting up your audio equipment. So let's go ahead and move on to the audio equipment. And now, I'm going to try to do a very comprehensive explanation of different types of microphones, of the audio board I got in front of me, and of course of the various cables I've got connecting the camera and such and all the things together. So, I mean, I've seen podcast episodes before where they're supposed to do tutorials, and they're like, well, to do a podcast, you need a microphone, a mixer board, and a computer. And, well, I got all three of those things, and nothing worked. I'm like, so I have no idea what's going on. So spent hours and hours and hours reading about different things, and finally, after some fiddling around and probably wasting about $200, I got this darn setup working right. So let's start with the audio board I got in front of me here. This particular model is a PV. It's PAVEY PV8, because essentially it's theoretically 8 channels, where it's got basically 4 microphone inputs and four mono inputs, I should say, because there's 4 microphone channels, 4 line-in channels, and then 4 insert channels. And obviously, what I'm saying there is there's actually each channel has either microphone, line-in, and insert import. Obviously, you can only use one at a time, so you can't have the microphone and the line-in, the same channel, plugged in at the same time. Now, the microphone inputs on this particular board are XLR inputs. As I mentioned, they're little round circles with 3 plugs to them. And those kind of inputs are generally used by more higher-end microphones. Some of the more professional ones, because XLR cables tend to have better shielding than these tiny little thinner cables you're going to find on, say, computer microphones. Or in this case, I've got what's called a lavalier microphone, which I'll talk about in a minute. So, also on the board, you're going to find a whole bunch of crazy little knobs. For each channel now, let's start down the bottom. You got what's a level. It's more or less, for simplified purposes, it's basically an additional volume control for that channel. Now, I've only got one channel actually turned up here because the other five input channels are actually all turned to zero because nothing's connected to them. So make that a rule of thumb. Any kind of gain, or in this case, the level dial, when you got nothing connected to that channel, turn it down. So let me go ahead and actually crank up one of these channels for a second. And chances are on the video, you'll probably hear some really nasty static. Well, you might. So that, in this case, I just cranked up channel 2 all the way up. So let me turn it all the way back down. And especially if you have, like, say, just like a cable that goes nowhere or something plugged into the channel, and you do that, that's going to cause a heck of a lot of feedback. Not feedback. A heck of a lot of garbage to appear in the channel. It's just going to sound real nasty. So I'm going to go ahead and move up to this next dial, which is basically a directional dial. As you see, it's got a little C, and then it's got an L on the left side, R on the right side, for changing whether the audio is going into the left channel or the right channel. So let me go ahead and turn that to the left. And now, right now, all the audio, if you look at my little blinker lights here, is going to the left channel. So chances are, if you listen to me on the headphones, you're probably only hearing me through the left channel right now. Let me go ahead and turn that thing all the way to R to the right. And now if you go back over here, you can see all my audio is going through the right channel and not the left channel. So now it's directly reversed in your headphones. So let's go ahead and turn that thing back to center. So I got equal volume going out to the left and to the right channels. I'm going to skip these next two colored knobs. I don't ever use them, to be honest with you. But therefore, the control has the different types of outputs up here. Like you've got what's called the... You got a monitor output, which for if you're doing an audio recording, a monitor is a very kind of low power speaker to let the band members hear what's going on. And there's also an effects output, which you can use to send to other devices. So that's what these orange and red knobs are for. These next up here, the blue knobs, are basically controlling various pitches. Like there's a high knob, a mid-range knob, and a low knob. Obviously, the low knob corresponds to the low sounds. Mid corresponds to mid-range, and high corresponds to high-range sounds. Like, let me go ahead and turn down the low and the mid and crank up the high. And it probably is going to make my voice sound a little bit higher than it normally is. And then, or I can go ahead and let's crank up the mid-range and the low and turn the high all the way down. You'll probably definitely sound a little louder. You can see the little lights are blinking like crazy over here. And my voice will probably also sound a little bit lower than normal. So let me go ahead and just turn them back to middle. For most of the time, I'm going to find myself, I just use them in the middle. I don't try to do anything fancy with them or anything. Now, the last knob at the very top, and the most important, is the gain. Gain is essentially the amplifier. It goes anywhere from 0 to 10, and just basically it turns up power on the microphone. Suddenly, I start turning down this microphone. You'll hear me getting quieter and quieter as I go down. So I'm turning down the gain. Let me turn that gain back up to where it was. And I bet there for a while you probably couldn't even hear me talking because the gain was all the way down in zero. And that basically means no power is going to the thing. So, ideally you don't want to crank the gain up too much. The higher you crank the gain up, not only does it increase my voice, but also is going to increase any noise that may exist in the channel with in my microphone channel. However, setting the gain too low not only would cause problems where, A, you can't hear me as well, but back in episode 10, the one with the absolutely horrendous audio, what happened there was I actually had a gain turned down real low. Like I had it down set maybe a 3, where right now I'm at a gain of 8. And the end result, so myself and Graham were talking, and the volume of our voice is so low, I had to go into the actual computer and boost up the volume via the computer. And that not only boosted up the volume of us talking, but also the volume of all the background noise and crap and the ground interference that was in there. And, well, we can talk about that a little bit later, but it got really pretty messy. So, at least in my board, I can't guarantee it's the same in every board. Usually when I got the gain cranked up at a good level, it's going to be over here, my little green and yellow blinky lights are going up to maybe about the second or third light when I'm just talking normally. So that's about a pretty decent level for people to hear. So let me move up here to talk about the microphone inputs. Now, as I mentioned, of these three different inputs here, I'm probably just going to ignore insert. I don't ever use insert, to be honest with you. Line, I don't normally use it when recording a podcast, but I have played around with it. Because line level is everything that's not microphone level. So, for example, your output, if you have an iPod or computer speaker, is all line level. So, I mean, if I wanted to, I don't have my Creative Vision on me right now, but I could actually run a cable output from my Creative Vision into this line in, and then I could use the gain and volume controls to change everything. And actually, I could play some music in the background if I wanted to, assuming I want to get sued by the RIAA for playing some licensed music, which I'm not going to do. But, so the very top, and what I'm going to focus on mostly, is the microphone input. Now, I've got a big, clunky little metal device plugged in the microphone input, and then this very small, slender cable that runs all the way along the ground, and eventually it's going to come back up through my shirt here to my microphone I'm wearing. So the reason for that is I'm using what's called a lavalier microphone. They're also called lapel. Let me show you the actual box of the microphone here. This is the particular model I'm using. I got it off Amazon.com for about $20, and I've got actually four of them. And frankly, it's a lot better than what I had in the past, where back in episode 10, the horrendous audio, I was actually using a hacked up setup like this with Skype headset. So I'll talk about all those in a minute. So you're going to find there's about three types of microphones out there. It's called dynamic range microphones. Like, here's the one I'm showing you right now. And these microphones are usually the ones you see when, you know, artists and musicians and bands and their singers have. They're very, each kind of large and kind of the nice little bulb on the end. And normally they're going to have an XLR cable connector, which will fit natively straight into these XLR plugs. The bottom end Radio Shack one, because I didn't want to pay a lot of money for it. And it actually doesn't have an XLR connector. It actually goes just to a quarter-inch jack, which I'll talk about in a minute. Now, the second type of microphone that's out there are called condenser microphones. The condenser microphones are actually built around the idea of a capacitor. I won't get too much into electrical theory in this episode, but we'll talk about this, I'm sure, later on. But a capacitor, do I have one laying around? Let me run over here and grab one. You guys have seen these if you ever built a computer or look inside a computer. The little blue-looking usually blue cylinders, but they come in different shapes and sizes. And long story short is they're designed to hold electrical charge. And basically, a capacitor is essentially two metal conductors. So inside this little blue thing, there's probably two sheets of metal of some kind with some kind of insulator in between them. And the whole idea of the capacitance, we'll go into the physics behind it, but the capacitance is basically a function of the area of the two metal pieces and the distance between them. And a condenser microphone essentially is a variable capacitor. What it would do is as I talk, it actually changes the distance between the two metal plates, and therefore distance between the two metal plates change, the overall capacitance of the circuit changes, and I can detect those changes in the capacitance and convert that into a sound signal. Now, I don't actually have a full-blown capacitor microphone here with me. I haven't used them for the podcast, but also, capacitor microphones often need some kind of external power. Now, some boards have that power, some don't. Mine does in the form of what's called 48-volt phantom power, because it obviously provides 48 volts to the microphone, which is this little button right here. And most of the time, you're not going to use it, because most dynamic range microphones will not require that 48-volt phantom power. And the little thing I got hooked up to right now actually has its own battery built into it to provide power to it. So that's just another type of microphone out there, the condenser microphone. It brings me to the third and final type of microphone, which is the electret microphone. Let's see if I... Electric microphones are essentially a special type of condenser microphone, except they're a lot smaller, usually higher impedance, and they require a much lower source of power. So if you ever used a computer microphone, like a Skype headset like I used to use, or you know, any kind of computer microphone on a stand, those are electric microphones, because they usually operate anywhere between 1.5 to 5 volt input to them to reduce the sound. So, that's what I've actually got kind of on me right now. Though, the box officially identifies this thing as a condenser microphone, which is a true statement, because electric microphones are condenser microphones. They're just a very small miniature type of condenser microphones. And I brought up a new word in there. It's called impedance. Impedance in terms of microphones is essentially measuring the overall electrical resistance of that microphone. So basically, how easily can electricity flow through the microphone? In general, lower impedance usually is better. These dynamic range microphones have usually pretty low impedance, whereas the electric microphones like I'm talking through you right now actually generally have fairly high impedance. The particular microphone I got that I showed off here has an impedance of 1,000 ohms, that's fairly low impedance. I mean, a low impedance microphone is probably around 400 or 600 ohms. And in case you're curious, ohm is the measurement of resistance in electricity. So just another term I'm tossing out there. Medium impedance is probably a little over 1,000 ohms, but you can get some microphones, like some computer microphones and little Skype headsets will have upwards of 3,000, 4,000 ohms of impedance. So let's talk about the microphone setup I have here. What's this big clunky metal thing I got plugged into the board? As I mentioned, I'm wearing what's called a lavalier or lapel microphone. And you've probably seen a lot of people wear these. On the very back here, recommends their newscaster style. So, I mean, chances are, if you've seen any video podcast, they've probably used these, like, you know, both Digdation and the Totally Rad Show, they wear these little things. They're these tiny little black microphones that attach to your shirt. Like, right now, I'm kind of tapping on it. You can probably hear your microphone going crazy there. So, it basically something clips onto your shirt, and it's very small, it's relatively discreet, and the wire runs down through your shirt. First it's going to have to hit is a little kind of transformer. So let me show you here, clipped in my pants. This is basically a little power transformer. The reason is, as I mentioned, electric microphones need to have some source of power. Theoretically, you can build your own custom electric circuits, which would provide the 5-volt power necessary from the plus 48-volt phantom power this board can provide. But often it's easier, you can just get a small little adapter, not even adapter, these little amplifiers will usually come with a microphone. Assuming it was designed to work with audio equipment. Like you'll find if you buy a computer microphone or those Skype headsets I have, did not come with one of these because they're designed to be plugged into the computer where the computer will provide the necessary power to power the microphone. And inside this thing, in case you're curious, is actually a very simple circuit. I actually dismantled one of them, built my own version of them, but so this essentially provides power to the microphone, and therefore that takes the power back to the board. Now, what this big clunky metal thing is, I got another one sitting right here, is it's a transformer. As I mentioned, the whole idea of low impedance versus high impedance microphones. Now, these XLR inputs on the board are for low impedance microphones. So, problem is, my microphone, obviously I mentioned, is 1,000 ohms impedance, so it's a relatively higher impedance microphone. This transformer here allows my high impedance microphone to work with a low impedance circuit. Now, if I wanted to, I could actually plug this type of microphone in, since it has its own power, into the line in, but it's not going to sound as good. It'll be more muffled and it'll be reduced because line in inputs have a higher internal resistance than the XLR inputs do. So that's a quick summary of the various types of microphones. As I mentioned, you got the dynamic range, you got the condenser microphone, and you got the electric microphone, or in this case, which is in the form of a lavalier and a lapel microphone. Now let me show off my old little setup I had here. It's actually these old Skype headsets I got. They're basically low-end Plantronics headsets. And they, as I mentioned, since they were designed for the computer, they did not come with a nice little power adapter like I got clipped in my belt right now. And these things they have a much higher impedance. I don't know the exact number, but similar models have upwards of high impedance, about 3,000 ohms for these microphones versus the little thing I'm wearing right now. So they didn't sound nearly as good, and plus they got a bunch of background noise to them. Like, maybe if you noticed, if you watched the video from last episode, episode 11, you'd notice I was carrying around a little XLR cable. Because it's kind of a funny little story about that, is that I was actually being a ground, because what happened was I was getting a lot of ground noise. I mean, you probably heard in the past couple episodes, there's a little zzzz, someone's like constantly humming in the microphone or spitting in the microphone. That essentially happens when basically background noise kind of gets into the microphones, because what you'll find is a long wire is an excellent antenna. So if you don't got proper grounding in the equipment, you're going to get that background noise. You're going to start really compiling and piling up. It's not going to sound very good. You get that loud buzzing or, you know, some of these little fidgety noises in the background, little pops, and it's going to sound pretty bad. As you've probably, if you listened to the past couple of episodes, you know that didn't sound very good. So why don't I show you my last section of cables here, which I've got running from my my mixer board here. They come out, and they actually go through a long cable up until the side of my camera where the microphone input is at. Now the question is, what are these little special all these cables? As I mentioned way back at the start about the idea of line input versus microphone input, and that the board outputs everything at line level, which is higher power than the mic input level. So these cables I got here, each of them just a single mono channel cable, is what's called an attenuation cable. And that essentially is a resistor in line with the circuit, or with the line. So it reduces the power from the board. So these attenuation cables are measured in the unit decibels. Obviously, decibels is another way of measuring power for sound and electricity related to sound. So the approximate reduction from line level output to microphone level output is about 50 decibels. These particular cables I've got actually reduce it by 60 decibels. So it kind of quiets it down a little bit more than it needs to, but that's not really a bad thing. Someday I'm going to go ahead and actually cut one of these apart. Well, I got another one laying around here, and see what's inside these things. I can build my own, because you can, if you know how to build electronic devices, you can figure out the math for how many decibels is how many resistance, and you actually build a little resistor circuit to actually reduce the output down to a desired level, and therefore you get maybe the exact 50 decibels that you like to get, and not just the approximate 60 decibels you get with the various cables. Let me talk about the last side of the board here. I didn't talk about this one too much. On the very right-hand side of the board is basically the main control panel. We've got the master volume, which essentially controls another volume control for the entire, all the channel inputs, where, you know, these gains here are all individual level controls. The master level controls all of them together. Like, I mean, it wouldn't do anything right now, but I can turn this thing down. Now I'm going to sound a lot quieter. I can crank this thing up, and I'm going to sound louder, maybe even a little bit distorted. So I'm going to put it back to where it was. Had I actually had some music in the background, or say Kyle or one of my other hosts with me today talking, he would have heard their voices go up just as much as he would have heard mine go up. There's obviously, here's some more sound outputs for, as I mentioned, the effects and the monitor outputs from before. A little power light. You've got a microphone headset here. So if you have actually had an audio engineer, they have their headphones plugged in here so they can hear what the sound's like, make sure everybody sounds all right. Here's obviously volume control for the headphone output. And down here, this little button is the 80 Hertz low cut. Now what this means is basically any really low sounds, in this case, that occur below the frequency of 80 Hertz, it will be dropped. So I mean, it's useful in situations where there's a lot of wind sometimes, because wind, usually the low reverb of wind, if I were to sit here, I'm going to blow my microphone. Wind often can be blow at a very low frequency, and therefore it won't sound nearly as, you know, it'll really distort your video, and wind really wreaks havoc on the cameras. Well, I hope you enjoyed my long rambling about video podcasting and all the various technology involved. So hopefully you took something away from it, and maybe if you're interested and want to spend some money. So I'm going to talk about cost while I'm thinking of it. On this board here, the PV-PV8 was about $103. I got it from a local music store. And you can find it online from anywhere from about $120 to $150. So obviously the number of channels you want to buy depends on the number of people you can have on your podcast. For me, my 4 microphone channel should be enough for all my future plans. Until, well, if I ever want to have a large roundtable discussion, it probably won't be for a long time. As you see, I have a hard enough time getting another person on the podcast as it is. As I mentioned, these little crazy transformers here, I purchased them from Radio Shack. They run for about $15 a piece. So if you don't have a microphone that natively supports an XLR connectors, you're going to need one for each. So I do have 4 of those, so that's about $60. So we're up to about maybe $210 right now. Each of these particular microphones, they retail, according to Amazon, for $40, but I got them for about $20 or $25. So the best thing I can say with microphones, I mean, this brand, I do like it. I've had a setup run with 2 of them at once. It sounds great. I haven't got all 4 of them up and running, but I imagine they're going to sound just as well. So obviously, generally, the more money you spend, the more better microphone you're going to get. But as always, read reviews and just see what people have said about them. See if they like them, if they don't. If someone's got, you know, a crappy review, there's not very many reviews, I won't recommend buying it. Dynamic range microphones, they can cost wildly. This is the base end Radio Shack one. Normally retails at $30, but I mean, it was actually on sale for $25 last time I was up there. But I mean, you can spend $30 to hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on these things. Cables can be kind of expensive because they tend to basically, it's where they can have the biggest markup. You'll find, like, in the computer world, Cat5 cables, Ethernet cable, oh, Cat5 cable, Ethernet cable. The Cat5 cables, USB cables, FireWire cables, often all have a high markup on them. So in the case of cables, you may actually want to try eBay. If not, go to Radio Shack. They have a whole wide selection of them. I got a bunch of crazy little adapters here. Adapters for, obviously, different size plugs. Like, these guys are 1/8 inch to 1/4 inch, quarter, you know, stereo to mono, 2 mono channels to 1 stereo input. So it depends on what you're going to need for that. And, well, so my total setup here that I finally settled with was the $130 for the mixer. Another $16 for the 4 microphone things, or $190. And if each microphone, we'll say, was $25 after shipping, because I paid actually for 2-day shipping on to get these things in time for various certain activities. So let's say $25 a piece, it's $100. Maybe just shy of $300 is the total setup. Of course, factoring in everything else I spent, I probably blew close to another $200 in various other parts that I didn't need to buy. So if you follow the instructions I've got here, some different microphones, and get the setup running, I bet you can probably save a lot more money than I did. That was my whole point of doing this. So, hopefully you enjoyed my long rambling about the different aspects of video podcasting. And just so you know, in case you're curious, all these things can obviously apply to audio podcasts as well. Just instead of running the audio input to a video camera, you're going to run into a computer or some other recording device. Actually, another little thing over here. It's actually, I lied to start. I'm going to talk a short, brief thing about miniature war games and some of the stuff we got coming up here. As you know, I've been running a little goofy promotion. What is Jason up to? So here's a nice, clear shot of what I'm up to. So, try to figure out what that is, and well, alright. And I've got over here a few more little things. They're actually interesting. They're a little, what? I'll be there as a Stingray Starfighter. If you look at, compare it next to the actual picture here from the Aerotech 2 book. Back in episode either 7 or 9, I think it was 9, yeah, 9 when we were talking about aerospace fighters, I'm like, I wonder if we can build our own figures. And what do you know? Apparently you can. So, coming up in a future episode, I'm going to be showing you how you can build these little figures here, because this is actually going to become a master for making a mold and doing some resin casting. So I'm going to show you how to do that. And, well, that's about all my little terrain projects coming up, except we'll see what else comes down the way. And I guess with that, that's all I've got to ramble on for today. So have a good night. I'll see you guys again in about 2 weeks. And I'll guarantee you something Miniature War Game related then. So, and of course, if you have any questions or comments, I'm Jason at RockoSoftware.com. Thanks for listening. Have a good night. And I'll see you in the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
Copyright 2007, RockoSoftware.com. The intro music down with everything is by the transfer with the choir from www.podsafeaudio.com.